The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, North London or Manchester? Which crosstown rivalry is best? Hornet managers and houseflies, which last longer? We round up all the big stories and the big games ahead this weekend as the Premier League returns from the derbies to deserbies. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show. September 29th, listener. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm here with Duncan Alexander. Hello, Duncan.
Hello, James.
Dom Fifield.
Good morning, James.
Yeah, all right. Laurie Whitwell, who, just as we were rolling up to say hello to him, put a mouthful of cereal into his mouth. Laurie, what are you eating?
I'm eating Special K with a bit of milk.
All right, well, I mean, that's a good choice. If you were going to take a dump all over kind of broadcasting etiquette with a bowl of cereal,
I thought I had time. You suddenly whipped up the pace.
Well, yeah. Listen, this is the third attempt we've had at starting this one, but each time stuff gets mentioned that cannot
Kellogg
be mentioned.
Kellogg start, I think you'll find.
Yeah. Yeah, the last one involved Laurie revealing that he's done time for gun crime, and I'm not even kidding, Laurie.
You're not kidding, no. I don't know if 3 hours in a cell. Whilst I've been arrested, it counts as doing time. But yeah, that happened when I was 18. It was a toy gun. I was dressed as Woody from Toy Story. Not at the actual right. time, but it's a whole thing that would take the whole podcast to explain. But yeah, there we go.
Well,
teaser.
We can't reach your back either to pull the cord. So
that is
little Woody aside.
Yeah. good. It's a big weekend ahead, he said. For some, it's going to be the first Premier League action for a month, which is going to be interesting to see how that affects teams and that. There's a full fixture list as well for the first time, what feels like ages. And, of course, there's also some big results midweek that we should maybe touch on before we get on to the return of club football. For example, Scotland, Tuesday night in a rainy Krakow, a depleted side for Steve Clarke, holding on to that 0-0 draw against Ukraine. And winning promotion to Nations League A in the process, leapfrogging England and Wales. Steve Clarke's side also qualifying for the Euro 2024 playoffs if they need that. They've now got that kind of wild card in their back pocket. Congratulations to the Scots, hey Dom?
Yeah, superb performance. Amazing, really, considering the number of players they'd lost to injury and illness. They had a patched up back line, but young players coming in and excelling, and it wasn't a complete backs to the wall performance. They actually, you know, they played quite bravely. They played a high line. They were organised, disciplined, and created a few chances themselves. So in the end, thoroughly well deserved. And it is an incredible turnaround considering, you know, the disappointment of missing out on in the qualification for the World Cup to the same opponents in the semi final of the playoffs last year. So. Was it last year or was it earlier this year?
It was earlier this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, just a fantastic turnaround. And yeah, it's great to have some British involvement in Pot A of the Nations League.
League A, yeah. Also in the Nations League, in Braga, a late Alvaro Morata goal, with just 2 minutes on the clock, gave Spain the victory they needed to beat Portugal and reach the Nations League finals. They'll be there next summer alongside Italy, Croatia and Netherlands. Lots of debate post that game in Portugal about the future of Cristiano Ronaldo. Maybe talk about that later on. Shout out to Brazil, who continued their very impressive form with a 5-1 win over Tunisia. Oh, some of the goals in that, well worth checking out. And also, Iran soccer team, we were talking about them with Basil Mukhdadi last Monday. They then had a 1-1 draw with Senegal. I think the thing that a lot of people have commented on is the fact that the players actively taking part in the protests that have been raging back in Iran over the death in custody of Mahsa Amini. When the national anthems were played, they donned black jackets to cover up the Iran emblems on their jerseys as their way of expressing their support for the protests. Brave stuff. Iran's next opponents, of course, will be in their debut game at the World Cup, and that'll be England. We talked about on Tuesday with Raphael Honigstein their 3-3 draw against Germany. But Duncan, you were there. Did you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was there. It was, pretty low-key match first half. You know, lots of goals second half. Would have been England's first home win from 2-0 down since April 1920, which is quite a long time. But it is also their longest winless run, because obviously it ended as a draw, going into a major tournament ever. So I think all the concerns... Yeah, you can look at the last 20 minutes and say it was improved, but I think Nick Pope didn't have a great game. Obviously, he probably won't be playing, but Harry Maguire also didn't, and he possibly will. So, yeah, it seems like once again we're going into a tournament where certain players are kind of undroppable, which hasn't always helped England in the past.
Indeed. Harry Maguire's got a big game coming up this weekend. He said, segueing smoothly into the fixture list for round 8 of the Premier League, which looks like this. Let's see, Saturday, October kicks off with the North London Derby. League leaders Arsenal hosting Spurs, who could, with the win, make a rare appearance themselves on top of the table. At 3 o'clock on Saturday, you've got Bournemouth, Brentford, Palace, Chelsea, Fulham, Newcastle and Saints Everton, and Brighton's new boss debuts away at Anfield. That evening, there's West Ham Wolves, which is 18th against 17th. Sunday, the Manchester Derby. Oof. That's at 2 o'clock, and that's followed by Leeds Aston Villa. And then Monday, the actual bottom two. Leicester take on Forest in the look at us, who'd have thought we'd still be here, not me, manager derby. Let's get your sizzling pre-game talks on all of that, starting maybe in North London.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Halfway through the first half, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Delivers in the derby yet again.
Woof, that was the sound of far away last May, everybody, when Arsenal and Spurs met at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, battling for the last Champions League spot back then. It was Spurs that took it with a 3-0 victory, two goals from Kane, as per usual. Son with the other one. This time they meet with top spot on the line, as well as North London pride, and with both sides coming in off whopping wins. Before the break, Arsenal, you remember, had that 3-0 at Brentford and then a convincing victory in the social media as well. Spurs, meantime, did Leicester 6-2. Ooh. All right. What's your feeling this time around, folks?
It's actually a really difficult one to call, I think. I mean, I think Arsenal have been playing better, but they're kind of giving up better chances than Spurs are. Spurs aren't playing well, but they're defensively possibly the best team in the league so far in terms of actual defending rather than necessarily goals conceded. If Spurs win, they'll replace Arsenal at the top of the table, which is the first time that will ever happened in top flight history. So yeah, it's both, Spurs unbeaten, Arsenal top. You can't even say the team that takes the lead is going to be in a pole position, because this fixture's had more comeback wins than any other in Premier League history. So yeah, I think we just have to kind of tune in almost and see what happens. But I think you would make Arsenal favourites. They've only lost one of their last 29 home games against Spurs in the Premier League. So, yeah, I think you'd make Arsenal narrow favourites, but Spurs showed last time out that they don't even have to play that well and they can score a lot of goals.
Right. Remarkable stat about Arsenal's record at home to Spurs. It's been over 8 years since either away side won a North London derby in the Premier League. Incredible, though, Duncan. So, basically, Arsenal have never been replaced by Spurs at the top of any English First Division. How often have Spurs been top of, say, the Premier League?
Well, if we look at, let's take Manchester United, who are unsurprisingly top, 2,362 days, then Chelsea on 1,590, then Man City on 1,042, and Arsenal just behind on 1,030, so they could overtake City in a few weeks if it carries on. Spurs are down on 72 days, which is 57 fewer than Norwich City. So Tottenham fans waking up wow. and checking CFAX and or the internet to see if their team's still top. Hasn't actually happened that often. So,
Sorry, you were saying that they've been top of the table in the Premier League 57 days less than Norwich City.
92, 93. There's that great game, wasn't there? United went to Carrow Road and won, I think, 3-1 in the end. And when I think that maybe took Norwich off the top or something like that. But that was, so Norwich 50-odd more than Spurs. Ouch.
Incredible. Incredible. In terms of lineup going into this game, Sun, who signed off before the international break, coming off the bench for a memorable hat-trick and then scored a couple of times for South Korea over the past week. Richarlison, my word, his form for Brazil has been extraordinary.
Richarlison obviously had his own issue in midweek, which we didn't mention in the first section, but you know, the banana being thrown at him in Paris. That's fairly traumatic, and his form on the pitch has been superb, and you just wonder whether he might. I don't know. It seems maybe it's daft to suggest that an incident like that might spur him on, but I mean, he has been excellent when picked, but for a game like this where, you know, Arsenal are sort of their revival this season has really been based on having the ball further up the pitch and pinning teams back. You'd imagine that Spurs will play on the counter, in which case it would be perfect for Son to come in and sort of revive the combination with Harry Kane that's worked so well in recent years.
Basically, they've had to flog Kane and Son to death, and now they've got Kulusevski and Richarlison, who are both, you know, proper Premier League forwards that can score goals, do different things. I mean, I suppose Richarlison brings you that aerial threat. I know Harry Kane can score with his head, but he's more authoritative in the air, isn't he, Richarlison? So, as Dom has touched on there, I think you kind of want to put Richarlison back out on the pitch, you know, after that incident in Paris, you know, just, you know, horrendous. And I think he seems like someone that will tackle that kind of stuff head on. He came out, didn't he, with the social media post. You know, he's a strong character, it seems like, so getting back out on the pitch.
Yeah, is he not also the kind of character you want in a derby, the kind of player who's going to get under other people's skins and that?
He was particularly good in Merseyside derbies at winding up Liverpool players and commentators and fans. So I'm sure he'll take to the North London derby, which, you know, arguably is even more volatile than the Merseyside derby on the pitch sometimes. So, but I guess going back to the point, it shows how far these teams have come. As Laurie was saying, you know, Spurs have got an embarrassment of riches now to choose from. You know, Arsenal have got a settled team with a focal point up front. That hasn't been the case recently. So, I mean, these are the two sort of the teams on the rise in the Premier League, if you look at, you know, Chelsea and Liverpool sort of fading a bit this season. So it's a massive fixture to come back to. I think it's really going to set the tone for this kind of really busy period heading towards the World Cup.
Richarlison, with some talking to do perhaps on the pitch. I mean, it is extraordinary in 2022 that people are still lobbing food stuff as some kind of pithy commentary. But meanwhile, Arsenal's Brazilians didn't even get invited, NFI'd to the Seleção this time around. Will that mean they'll be playing with an extra edge, do you think? Gabriel Jesus, Gabriel Martinelli? Or will they be extra rested?
I do think that the travelling that players will have done in this international window probably should be taken into account, and it may work in Arsenal's favour that those guys haven't had much involvement at all, and they've been able to train back at Colney. I know Richarlison's obviously only been in Paris, but it does have an impact. And those players like Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus will be painfully aware now that this next, how many, 6-7 week period is when they can stake their final claim for a place at the World Cup. And they need to just fly into this period displaying their best form. And that should work in the club's favour, you'd imagine.
Wow. Just going to have to tune in and find out what happens, as Duncan suggests. It's 12:30 on Saturday that Arsenal, a point above Spurs and Man City, who of course will be in action on Sunday. 4-point gap between Man City and Spurs down to Brighton in fourth. Brighton, of course, welcoming a new manager this weekend. Man United in fifth are 6 points off the top. Chelsea are 8 points off the top. Liverpool a full 9 points behind. We'll be talking about those teams and loads more preview stuff shortly. Next, we'll have a special on this day.
This is Ian Irving, host of Talk of the Devils, the podcast dedicated to Manchester United from The Athletic. After what's felt like an eternity without Premier League football, it's back with a bang for United this weekend, with the Manchester derby taking top billing. Join myself, Andy Mitten, Laurie Whitwell and Carl Anker every week, but particularly this week, as we build up to what's probably the toughest test yet of United's newfound optimism under Erik ten Hag. Just search for Talk of the Devils wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to click follow and subscribe for access to all our episodes.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
29th of September, as I think we established earlier. On this day, in 2007, Duncan, what happened?
The highest scoring Premier League game of all time. Portsmouth 7, Reading 4.
We could have double figures here this afternoon in terms of goals. Absolutely amazing. Muntari. No mistake. Terrific penalty. Reading, quite simply, have been taken apart.
Woof. Amazing. 11 goals, I make that. And Reading missed a penalty. And it was only 2-1 at half-time. What a rare game. What a rare game that was at Fratton Park. It also, I believe I'm right in saying, shares the record for the most number of different goal scorers in a single Premier League match.
That's true. Up there with, quite neatly, the North London derby, the 5-4 when Arsenal won at White Hart Lane. That had 9 different scorers, yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
Share it out.
That season, Pompey went on to win the FA Cup. Reading went on to be relegated. Crikey. Which fixture this weekend, Dom, do you think has the best chance of breaking that 11-goal record? Hmm?
West Ham Wolves.
Yeah.
I reckon they'll get to 7-4 by May, yeah. Fair point.
7 games into the season, these two teams have each managed only 3 goals so far. Hmm. But are playing in a particularly delicate-looking fixture, residing, as they both do, within the bottom 4. I was going to maybe proffer Liverpool-Brighton as an option. I know that Brighton have only lost 2 of the last 15 Premier League games, and their new manager, Roberto De Zerbi, is inheriting the best defence in the Premier League so far this season. They've only conceded 5 times. But I just wonder, it's quite a way to start your tenure in a new league, away at Anfield, against a Liverpool side that's had a bit of time off, a lot of them away on international duty, but still, that's desperate for points, 9 points back off the top of the table, that wants to relaunch, that's got, crucially, Diogo Jota and Thiago back. Hmm, what do you think? Ooh, a Liverpool side that also put 9 goals past the opposition last time they faced a team from the South Coast that begins with B.
Yeah, that is true. Trent will be rested as well, so there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the opposite of a new manager bounce is, but when your manager gets poached by a bigger club, maybe there's a lost manager non-bounce. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's whether, I guess, De Zerbi sort of sticks with what, you know, Brighton have been doing, or whether he's tried to sort of change it at all in his short time there. But I think this break has been probably particularly helpful for Chelsea and Liverpool. So I think Liverpool probably have used this as a time to reset. And obviously their last game was a month ago in the Premier League. They drew 0-0 at Everton. Yes, it was 2 drop points, but they played okay and they created a lot of chances. That's the game with the most shots in it in the Premier League this season. So I think they're possibly playing slightly better than the results have shown. So probably it could be a bad afternoon for Brighton, or you know, maybe it'll be another troubled day for Liverpool. But they are on that long unbeaten run at Anfield.
This might be the perfect time for Brighton to change manager, in as much as at this stage last season, after 6 games, they had exactly the same number of points, 13, and they didn't win again until Boxing Day. So actually, they just nipped it in the bud.
All right, Mr. Palace, calm down.
Great stat, though, Dom. Interesting. They got that early thrust from the Graham Potter booster rocket, as it were, and now they're switching on to the next stage as they climb ever higher. I don't know. What do you think, Laurie?
I'm just thinking, are you suggesting it's, you know, obviously they did that with Chris Hughton, didn't they? They took decisive action when, you know, they were staying up and everyone thought this is fine, this is Brighton's level. And then they thought, no, actually we can aspire to higher, get Graham Potter in. So you're suggesting that Roberto De Zerbi is going to take Brighton into the Champions League places, Dom?
They're in the Champions League places. They're actually pushing for the title.
Keep them there.
Yeah. It's fascinating to see how he does, though. I mean, because that squad has been obviously moulded over a period of time by Graham Potter to be a Graham Potter team. So You know, De Zerbi's got to come in, and you know, with no benefit of a transfer window for a while yet, with a major international tournament to take place before he can actually get into the market and change things if he wants to. And let's see how he does. But it's a it's a difficult ask. And I think their run of fixtures now actually is a lot trickier than the ones they had already.
Every Premier League manager who started their career with an away game at Anfield has lost. So
is that
not
right?
That surprising, maybe. Goes David Pleat, the legendary Chris Hutchings, Ronald Koeman, Daniel Farke and Marcelo Bielsa. So, I mean, obviously Bielsa was, it was after promotion, but, and Farke. But yeah, it's a difficult, it's a hashtag difficult place to start your Premier League managerial career.
That's a long hashtag, Duncan.
It is quite long, yeah. That's why I hashtagged it, just crunch up a bit, yeah.
Not sure that'll trend.
Don, what is a hashtag Graham Potter team? And is Chelsea one of those?
I think it is, to be honest. A Graham Potter team I would have at the moment is a team that play fantastic possession, slick possession football up until the final third and then don't take their chances, which is pretty much what Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea was for, maybe not always that attractive to watch at times, but when their wing-backs were flying, they looked a good attacking fluid side. That to me is intriguing as well. Yeah, I mean, Graham Potter fits this mould, but he's got to then kick it on and take it on to the next level with players that actually take the chances and provide proper reward for all the, you know, the nice possession play and the build up. And I think it's, although he's had this international window and indeed the previous weekend when I think Chelsea actually played a behind closed doors game against Brighton just to so he could familiarise himself with the players he's inherited. This isn't easy because he's had so many away. I mean, so many players won't have returned to Cobham until Tuesday, Wednesday, perhaps even Thursday this week. So for him to get his ideas across early is, yeah, it's tricky. It's going to take an awful lot of team meetings and explaining what he wants from them.
Do you think he's the sort of manager, or is he kind of brave enough to kind of go, well, I've had these players for the international break, I'm going to use these in this game, or more of them? I mean, that would be a big call.
I don't know how you would be able to do that when you look at the numbers that have actually been away. It's not as if he's had, you know, loads to work with. It's, you know, even like when people like Conor Gallagher have been off with the 21s and haven't been around. So it's, that's probably asking too much. But what he has got, obviously, is when he went in at Brighton, he inherited a team that had been playing Chris Hughton style football for a while and had done it very, very well and pragmatically, and they'd stayed in the Premier League for two seasons. And maybe the players that he inherited weren't able to grasp immediately the concepts that he was trying to impress upon them. He comes in at Chelsea and he's got better quality of player who, as we've just said, have been playing something similar to his style over the last couple of years with Tuchel. So maybe they adapt quicker. You know, they take those new ideas on board quicker. Maybe they can do that in team meetings. Even in you know, if they're meeting up in the hotel prior to the game at Celeste Park on you know, Friday night, he can get his ideas across in those meetings as well. And we've been told lots that his greatest skill is communication, and he'll have to lean on that quite a lot, I'd imagine.
All right, Selhurst Park, 3 o'clock is where he makes his Premier League debut as Chelsea manager. Chelsea have won the last 10 meetings in all competitions with Palace, most recently the FA Cup semi-final. What kind of Palace will his Chelsea be up against this time? They haven't played in a month, Dom. How's that going to leave them?
We'd like to think that given how disrupted Palace's pre-season was with two squads on different sides of the world playing tournaments, they would have used the last month as a second pre-season sort of bonus time. And they've only had 4 or 5 players away in international duty, albeit they're better ones. So hopefully Patrick Vieira and Ocean Roberts will have got their ideas across, and we'll see something more akin to the Palace of last season in this run of games. Again, they've gone from the hardest start in the Premier League on paper to they've now got the easiest run of all the teams up until the World Cup. So,
apart from the Chelsea game, which apart
beyond
lose.
The well, it's including the Chelsea game at the moment because Chelsea are a mid-table team at the moment. But you know what I mean, it's the games beyond. It's their record against Chelsea's appalling, and it's a daunting game for them, but you'd like to think over the weeks ahead that they would they would improve and start taking some of the chances they're creating.
You're going along on Saturday, Dom?
Yes, I am. I'm covering it from the Palace point of view.
Magnificent. All right. Very good. Also this weekend, you've got the bottom four facing each other. Last place Leicester and next to last Nottingham Forest on Monday. And the almost winless West Ham and Wolves Saturday 5:30. Joint lowest scorers in the Premier League this season, as Dom was mentioning before. Wolves just one win in their last 14 Premier League matches, but a possible debut here for Diego Costa. Is that the most interesting thing about this game for a neutral?
Got to be, hasn't it? Diego Costa back in the Premier League. I mean, Dom will have covered him at Chelsea. And were you there when he set the fire extinguisher off?
Or, yeah, I was, yeah. Yeah, in the room.
Great stuff. You get sprayed?
He tried to set it off. He didn't actually set it off. It
was okay, said, right.
Quite difficult to set him off, actually. It's harder than it looks.
Bit of background here.
Oh, they'd won the title at West Brom, and Antonio Conte was conducting various press conferences post-match, and Diego Costa wanted to get on with the celebrations. So he and David Luiz appeared at the back of the room I think it was a Sunday's huddle the Sunday newspapers were talking to Antonio Conte. It was a Friday night game. And he was so frustrated, having sort of jumped up and around and sung songs for a while, he grabbed a fire extinguisher and was threatening to let it off in the room to disperse the crowd, let's put it like that. He was quelled.
Quite useful, because at Molineux, although it's at West Ham, isn't it? But at Molineux, they often set those big flamethrowers up before the game, don't they? So if he's adept right. with the extinguisher, maybe if anything goes wrong. And it has actually at Molineux.
Safety officer,
yeah. There's been a firework.
But we've just proved that he's not adept. He's useless.
Okay, right. Good point. Right. So hopefully he's better at scoring goals.
Neither of these teams are hashtag on fire either, as we mentioned, with their dismal runs and both down at the bottom end. So could be a grueling match, that, but a crucial one nonetheless.
We're heading to October. We're heading to October, and both these teams have scored fewer goals than Alexis McAllister in the Premier League this season, which I didn't have down at the start of the year. I mean, they're both underperforming their XG by a considerable amount. You know, they're the two teams that are doing it the most. So the tools are there, but they both need to cut loose and set off some fire extinguishers, metaphorically.
Yep, or however. Leicester against Nottingham Forest on Monday night, with both Steve Cooper and Brendan Rodgers in place as managers, very much against the pre-international break expectations. The Foxes are the only Premier League side yet to win this season. Forest, meanwhile, have three Midland derbies in a row, starting with this one here.
I suppose that you could say that's a derby where Leicester have signed nobody and Nottingham Forest have signed a whole squad, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, Brendan Rodgers might be looking a little bit enviously. I was at the game at the King Power, and his stuff after the game was really strong, I felt, on sort of almost end of days kind of talk, where he was saying about the players not being, you know, really good enough, and Soyuncu got a bit of a battering from him, and it kind of reminded me of, you know, Jose Mourinho in that press conference room when he accused his Chelsea players of betrayal. It wasn't quite as strong as that, obviously, but, you know, there's certain simmering anyway that's going on, so it will be a really interesting game. I mean, if they can get a win there, that might kind of spark something, but both managers, both teams really need a win.
Three more of those Saturday 3 o'clock games. Fulham taking on Newcastle, Bournemouth, Brentford and Saints Everton. Oh, Bournemouth, Brentford is the first ever top division meeting between these two clubs. How about that?
It's the most any two teams have played before their first ever top flight game. They've had 102 games between each other. I mean, you know, I can say this as a Wickham fan, but Bournemouth, Brentford in the Premier League is, you know, it's haunting for me to think what could be, because that's League One all over, isn't it? But yeah, I would totally be fresh.
That's true. That is very, very true. Ryan Christie returning after his excellent work with Scotland, scored and assisted against Republic of Ireland. Kenny says some recognition for Premier League Scots who've smashed this international break would be lovely. Indeed, Kenny. Indeed. Oh, Bournemouth had a 1-1 draw at Newcastle last time. They are only 1 point behind Brentford. How about
they're
that?
They're unbeaten since they lost 9-0. It could be the new thing for teams to sort their form out. Lose 9-0 and then buckle up.
Right.
Well, it was okay. Of the teams that have lost 9-0 in the top flight, I'm thinking, yeah, Southampton twice. Ipswich went down, didn't they, the season
they did
lost.
Go down, yeah. But Wigan didn't when they lost 9-1 at Spurs. Palace didn't. Yeah.
Oh. Just saying. It's a good omen, Dom. Lose 9-0, stay
alive. Lose 9-0. Unless you're Ipswich.
Concede 9, you'll be fine. Concede 8, it's not so great. There you go. Get out on a tea towel.
In other news from those 3 o'clock kickoffs, listener, the big Mitrovic Isaac Alexander battle, probably off. Isaac picked up a leg injury on international duty with Sweden. It's Isaac, isn't it? I'm calling him Isaac. It's Isaac. Isaac, then. Mitrovic, meanwhile, he's looking to add to his tally of 6 Premier League goals already this season. As many, I think I'm right in saying, Dom, as Wolves and West Ham have managed combined. That's remarkable, isn't it? Saints Everton. Everton are on a 6-game unbeaten run in all competitions. Will it be 7 after this one and this visit to St Mary's?
I mean, they will have been bolstered by that win just before the break. But I don't know. It's so difficult to predict with Southampton. I mean, very, very young team, but wildly unpredictable in terms of the level of performance that they put in. They were awful at Aston Villa. I mean, absolutely wretched. And yet they, you know, you go back a few weeks and they were battering Chelsea at St Mary's. So I guess that's what you get when you have a lot of young players really thrust together over a transfer window, and then they're sort of, well, they could do anything. They could win that game 5-0, could lose it 5-0. It's just,
they're kind of like adolescently moody, do you think? Sometimes just withdraw to their room. And
if Hasenhüttl shouted at them, they're like, oh, I can't be bothered with this, it's rubbish. But if he's, you know, giving them some pocket money that morning, they're like, come on, let's play Everton.
Or sugar.
Or sugar, yeah. Or both. They're the El Haribo, they're calling this game.
Yeah. Saints have lost 13 of their last 19 games, but often not the ones you were expecting. Oh, you mentioned Villa. The other game before we get onto the Manchester derby is their trip to Leeds. That's 4:30 on the Sunday. Leeds, another of those teams playing for the first time in a month, along with Brighton and Man United and Palace, I guess. So, yeah, they've had a full month to stew over their last result, which was, I don't know if you remember this, a 5-2 defeat against Brentford with Jesse Marsh throwing an epic wobbly on the sideline, which means he'll actually be banned for this clash.
That had been coming, hadn't it, for Jesse Marsh? He could have, you know, he was pushing the boundaries before that, you know, so it was a long time coming.
Do you think that without his presence on the sideline, does it represent a real difference for Leeds prospects in this game?
He's always shouting at them, isn't he? He's talking about verticality and, you know, energy and pressing. So that you do feel like there's an element there where do players need that in their ear the whole time? I don't know, it will be interesting to observe. I mean, I don't know, maybe Duncan can do some kind of running stats after the Villa game and see if it drops, you know, without Marsh there or something. I don't know if that's in your realm. You produce some zinging stats.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he'll be in the stands, won't he? So presumably he'll be on.
Just have to shout louder, megaphone.
And he can get into the dressing room at half time, can't he, as well? So imagine how much pent up energy he's going to have if they haven't run quite far enough in that first half.
He'll just be running round and round the dressing room like a hamster.
What you wouldn't give for a dressing room cam on Sunday afternoon. All right, well, next up, we've still got the Manchester derby to talk about. And also, if it's stats you're after, we've got some absolute doozies.
Hello, listener. Now, how would you like a nice fat slice of the Totally Football Show, but on your bookshelf / in your bathroom? Well, the good news is the all-new Totally Football book is available to order right now, and it's the place to read the finest football writing about where football is in 2022 from all of your favourites at Team Totally and The Athletic. We've got pieces by Daniel Storey, Carl Anker, Tom Williams and Katie Wyatt. James Horncastle has penned an emotional farewell to Giorgio Chiellini. Rafa Honigstein tells us about the thorny issue of Bayern Munich's relationship with Qatar. Duncan Alexander finds the most statistically average footballer in the Premier League, and it's all introduced by our very own James Richardson. There's also a day-by-day diary of last season, a comprehensive on this day section, and of course, a big chunk of quiz questions so you can run your very own Inter Totally with all your friends or by yourself. The Totally Football book is edited by Nick Miller and it's out on October the 6th, but you can pre-order it now from everywhere that sells books.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship side Watford have sacked Rob Edwards as their manager. Watford, sacking a manager, I know. They've replaced him with Slaven Bilic. Incredible stat, number one. Watford have had more managers in the last 5 months than Britain has had prime ministers.
At the time of recording.
Fair point.
That's true.
Fair point. Incredible stat number two, Duncan.
Yes, that's since 2012. This is Watford's 17th permanent manager, which is only one fewer than West Ham have had in their entire history. So different philosophies.
Anyone know offhand how long West Ham have been going?
127 years, maybe.
Is that
that's
right?
That's correct. It is. As formed as what club, Dom?
I know why Dom knows that.
The Ironworks, yeah, I do actually. Yeah. I should know that, shouldn't I, thinking about it, having written about it.
There you go. Dom's just written, but he actually wrote it some time ago, but it's pinned at the top of his Twitter feed, if you're interested. A very, very,
very
excellent and educational article about why teams are called what they're called. What was your favourite team name amongst all of that, Dom? I like the ones where you gave up and just said, yeah, it's probably because some other team
were. It's actually really
Alexander,
to find out
there was another team called Victoria. Yeah.
Port Vale's
Plymouth
quite
Argyle.
Good.
Nope, got nothing on this one. It might have been fashionable
Argyle, that was
to adopt a
great
Scottish
one.
Name. Was it?
Yeah, that was weird because all the sort of legends around it and how, oh, it was all because we had the Argyle regiment based in Plymouth when they weren't, and that does not
right.
Does not true. But no, there are loads of them. I mean, the Uniteds are quite good, but they're all a bit odd.
Mm.
I look forward to the 22nd century Dom Fifield explaining where hashtag United came from.
Nice. Anyway, we were talking about Watford changing managers. So 127 years West Ham have been going, and they've only had one more permanent manager in that time than Watford have had in the last decade. That is incredible. Anyway, a lot of Watford fans very unhappy about this. What's different about Rob Edwards getting the boot when it's happened so many other times?
It's different because his appointment was supposed to be them going in a different direction, appointing a young British coach who would build for the future. And indeed, some members of the hierarchy at Watford were claiming only a couple of weeks ago that they would stick by him through hell and high water, and then they sacked him after 10 games.
They didn't say the international break, though, did they? So
it is quite remarkable. The last seven permanent Watford managers have averaged fewer than 20 games each. Slaven Bilic, the next to try his luck. The Hornets have only won 3 of their last 10 league games, not uncoincidentally, and they currently sit 10th of the championship table, which is not what people was expecting. Were expecting people. They weren't expecting that. Anyway, let's get back to the Premier League.
Not coincidentally.
Not uncoincidentally. My double negative, is that trouble?
That would be coincidentally. It isn't a coincidence.
You're right, it's... Yeah.
So it's not coincidentally.
I'm suggesting there might be a connection.
Yeah.
Tricky that, though, isn't it? Because sometimes the double negative, and let's just get back to the Manchester derby, which is, nothing negative about that, 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon at the Etihad. And Laurie, you're going to be there. You're going to
yes.
be there to witness the matchup that all of football has been waiting for, Erling Haaland against Harry Maguire.
Harry Maguire you went with, okay. Well, I think he's injured for a start. He's got
no.
a little tweak, hasn't he? Yeah, unfortunately, we might be deprived of this epic battle of the big, large craniums. So, it's been Lisandro Martinez anyway and Rafael Varane last
right.
few games, and they've looked really good together. And the big thing that United fans are certainly getting excited about is the fact that when Erling Haaland played against Lisandro Martinez, Ajax versus Dortmund, he kept him quiet, apparently. It was a 4-0 win for Ajax. Rafa Honigstein, who you know knows his onions on these kind of things, he suggests that actually Haaland had a few chances. I need to go and watch the game and see if I can debunk it, because that might be kind of a fun match piece to see how they...
Yeah, he certainly took the three Erling Haaland chances, which he failed to take in that game. But it is interesting, isn't it? Quite a few Ajax elements from that game. Now, of course, at Manchester United, from Ten Hag, the manager, to Lisandro Martinez. Of course, Antony as well, who was another starter
in that
game.
4-0.
There you go. So Erling Haaland was shut down by Ajax that time. What do you think, Duncan? Is it going to be another remarkable performance by a Man United team who've actually won 4 league games in a row? Or are we going to see more of Mick Quinn's record shattered by the marauding Norwegian?
Poor old Mick Quinn. His legacy's just been eviscerated in front of us. This fixture's been won 21 times by the away team in Premier League history, which is the most of any fixture, and it's been particularly prevalent in the last kind of decade, really. City playing really well at Old Trafford, but then United digging out really good performances or backs the wall performances at the Etihad. So I think it's really interesting because, City are playing incredibly well in some spells this season, but there have been games where they've dropped points. There have been times where they've not played brilliantly. I mean, even Wolves with 10 men had a good spell against them last time out. As Laurie was saying, if they can stop Haaland, then, I mean, he can go level for Premier League hat-tricks with Ronaldo in this game if he scores one for the third home game in a row, which is decent. But, Bournemouth stopped him scoring, so why can't Manchester United?
Interesting. What about Ronaldo, Laurie? Is he going to be featuring in this one at all, apart from kind of moody shots from the sidelines?
Yeah, I think if everyone's available, he's on the bench, isn't he? But there's a little bit of a doubt over Marcus Rashford. He hasn't played since that Arsenal game. Wasn't in either of the Europa League games that United have had since that time. Still, supposedly a doubt. We'll hear from Erik ten Hag before the game, obviously. But I think if he's fit, I think he starts again up front. He's in a much better groove than he has been recently. And then Sancho on the left, who's looked really sharp, scored a great goal in Chisinau over in Moldova. And Antony, he's going to start Antony because he's paid 100 million euros for him. So he needs to make that one work. And then Bruno Fernandes is the number 10. So yeah, there's no space for Ronaldo if everyone's fit. And even if Anthony Martial's back, I mean, he's been out for a little while now. I mean, he's only played one game this season, having done pretty well in pre-season, where I think Erik ten Hag got quite excited about what he could potentially do for United, even though previous managers had kind of got exasperated with him. But I think if he's fit, he might even feature ahead of Ronaldo, which is kind of a pretty major fall for him, given he was their key scorer last season, a number of goals. I think 24, was it, overall? So I think ultimately, as Duncan alluded to there, the way that United have won at the Etihad previously has been soaking up the pressure, really, hitting on the counter-attack. It's not, great tactical flourishes necessarily, but it's worked well for them in the past. And if you have a front three of, Rashford, Sancho and Antony with Bruno pinging those balls over the top, then I think they've got a chance, actually, given City are coughing up some chances, aren't they? Albeit, United, if they can keep a clean sheet, that would be remarkable, really, because you just look at the way that City create chances and the fact that United have been brittle, certainly at Brentford. But I don't know, this back four they've got now seem like they've got a good unit about them. Malacia, Dalot, you know, continuing his good form, obviously scored for Portugal in the international break. And then, yeah, as I say, Varane and Martinez seem to have got a good understanding. And they've got speed about them, so they can make those recovery runs if they do get a bit out of shape.
Regarding the Ten Hag formation, Sasu Hayano has a proper question. He says, Brazil use Fred and Casemiro as a double pivot. Is that feasible or desirable for Man United?
It's something that we haven't actually seen. I mean, Fred's not been in the team. Casemiro's not been starting. It's been Scott McTominay and Christian Eriksen. Christian Eriksen has been a revelation. I think he actually could be really pivotal in this game, in that deep midfield role, being able to, when United win it back, you know, hold on to it or kind of make those quick passes. He takes the dangerous route more often than, you know, United's midfield, you know, in recent years. And that's unlocked attacks for United, particularly that goal that Antony scored against Arsenal. But yeah, Fred and Casemiro, I mean, there's that clip that was doing the rounds, it got shared amongst some of us on the Manchester pack I think Casemiro kicks it and it hits Fred in the face for Brazil, like some kind of comedy moment. So, you know, obviously when he signed, everyone was like, this is what he's bringing to Manchester United. But he hasn't really featured all that much, Casemiro. And I suppose that is a sign that all the other players were very much Ten Hag signings, were very much, this is who I want. Casemiro was a kind of, you know, it's hard to say this about a guy that's won the Champions League five times, but kind of a piece that they put in because he became available, rather than Ten Hag necessarily actively, this is the guy that I want. He obviously wanted Frenkie de Jong. So I think that kind of plays a part in his selections.
Dom, how significant do you think this game's going to be in the way the next few months go in the season?
Manchester Derby's always massive, isn't it? I mean, not just locally. I think City will look at this as an opportunity just to put United back in their place, almost, and just to remind them that they've still got a long way to go to catch them up, and that will be their motivation. And for United to bring momentum into the derby is significant as well. And they will go there believing that they can hurt City. So it's fascinating. It's going to be a brilliant occasion, and yeah, with sort of psychological implications for both teams.
How much is their momentum, as you say, like four straight wins coming into this, but they haven't actually played since the 4th of September. Can you still have momentum when you've had a month off?
I think the momentum will sustain because they've got into a good groove with those four Premier League wins, so it'll be like flicking back into it. And also, it was pretty much that team that played in Moldova. He played his strongest 11, really. So, you know, I don't think that will be a problem. I mean, I suppose against Arsenal and Liverpool, two really big wins, two massive confidence boosters. But they did, you know, Liverpool had a lot of possession in that game and they were a bit blunted. So maybe City, if they have that same kind of possession, they'll make those incisive passes in the final third that Liverpool weren't quite able to do. And against Arsenal, it could have gone either way until, you know, United had those quick couple of goals to go 3-1 up. But when it was 1-1, it felt like Arsenal were going to be the one team that would go on and win it. So United, for the run of four wins, there have been moments in those games where it's been a bit of a knife edge. So if City can get that sort of... I've seen them at the Etihad, particularly last season, where they all of a sudden hit the accelerator and United didn't know what to do, you know, and it was 4-1 in the end, but it could have been way more. And if they sort of smell blood and they go for it, you do wonder if those sort of ghosts of the past for United will resurface.
It's a good point, actually. I mentioned they hadn't played since the 4th of September, but that's in the Premier League. In the meantime, there have been a couple of Europa League clashes. The defeat to Real Sociedad and the win away at Sheriff Tiraspol with a goal from big Chris Ronaldo. Duncan?
I mean, we've talked about Haaland, obviously. We've talked about United and how well Eriksen's playing, but we haven't mentioned Kevin De Bruyne, who I think is quite funny because he's so good and so consistent. I think people just almost take it for granted, but he's leading the Premier League this season for assists, for expected assists and chances created. He's got 30 goal involvements in his last 30 starts, so you know, you can keep Haaland quiet for 90 minutes, but De Bruyne's kind of playing as well as he ever has. I think I predicted at the start of the season that he's going to break the Premier League assist record this season. Obviously, he jointly holds it with Thierry Henry for a season. So, yeah, I think United could do it, but City have got so many options that it will be a tough and long 90 minutes. But, yeah, doable.
All right. Duncan, though, it sounds like you're predicting Man City because De Bruyne. Dom, who and why?
Man City, I think, actually because of Haaland.
Hmm, fair enough. And Laurie?
I think City will win just because they know what they're doing more than United. It's an embryonic thing for United, and in those crucial moments, I think that'll prove telling.
We shall see then. We shall see. 2 o'clock on Sunday, that's happening. Monday, we'll be back to review all of the weekend's action. Not, of course, the Leicester Forest game, because that's happening Monday night. If you're hungry for top football content in the meantime, mention Dom's excellent piece about football nomenclature. What else have you got up there, Dom, at the moment? What's your freshest piece?
I've got a piece going up tomorrow, Friday morning, on France and their preparations for the World Cup, which, you know, I listened to the pod the other day, and Rafa talking about how it would be a disgrace if they didn't win it. This is actually their worst preparation for a World Cup in terms of results since 1958, and yet they probably still go there as favourites with Brazil. So yeah, it's quite interesting dynamics of that with Le Bleu at the moment.
Laurie, meanwhile, you're competing for Athletic's subscribers' attention with a very exciting international piece, which involved you going to Washington looking for Joel. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, I didn't find him. Spoiler. I probably should keep that back, shouldn't I, from the tweets that I put out and sort of see if I can tease more people coming to read it. But no, I did go to his office.
You won't believe what happened when... Yeah, sorry.
No, I went to his office. I was there for a work trip anyway, and so it wasn't necessarily that they sent me out there specifically for that purpose, but I thought whilst I'm here, I'll give it a go, see if I can find the guy that's pretty... quiet on Manchester United affairs. He says he's going to talk to the fans. He does do these fan advisory boards, but no one, you know, hears what he says in those things. So, and after the financial results came out last week, where the dividends were still coming out and United made record losses, you know, it's kind of crazy, really, when you think about it. So, what does he think of all that? So I went to his office. I even went to his house, did the old-fashioned journalistic door knock. He wasn't in. But I did speak to his neighbour, spoke to the receptionist at the office, and so got a bit of colour about how he works out there, how he lives out there. I think he's kind of got anonymity, really. You know, infamy over in Manchester, anonymity over in Washington, D.C., which I think is probably how he likes it.
Crikey. Well, that and more available at theathletic.com. Duncan, what's up on the analyst right now?
I've got a piece coming today, Thursday, ranking the 12 main derbies in Premier League history.
In terms of
slightly on numbers, well, on numbers, but also more on vibes and how good they are, because everyone knows, you know, an Arsenal Tottenham is possibly better than a Chelsea Fulham, or maybe not, but
right.
We'll see. But
what's the best derby then?
Well, at number one, I've gone for Aston Villa against Birmingham, which I maintain is the best, kind of most consistently derby-ish derby we've seen in the Premier League. Obviously, I haven't seen it for a while, but nearly every one of their games was incident-packed. So feel free to disagree, but I'm right.
Okay. That's there. That's there on theanalyst.com. And if you're curious as to who the most average footballer in the Premier League is, not on vibes, on numbers, then you'll find that within the covers of the Totally Football book, our brand new yearbook from the Totally Football Show. And that is out next week. All right then. Excellent. Well, enjoy yourself, whatever it is you spend your weekend doing, listener. We'll be back on Monday. Many thanks to producer Charlie, to Dom, to Laurie, to Duncan, and to you. And we'll see you on the other side of the weekend. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.